The Ticket.
Podcasts are brought to you in part by Lewis Jewelers, the official jeweler of The Ticket and proud partner of Michigan Athletics.
Hey, we're back, folks, here on the Michigan Insider Sports Talk 1050 WTKA, online at WTKA.com. Sam Webb, Styro Weintraub on the other side. That segment goes off the rails quite often. We're Rich Ready, but I love it. Love that about Rich. Things that I don't understand as we segue and we wait for Eric Adelson. You know, I talked about earlier this morning that this dude, RJ Young, not understanding how he still has a vote. I mean, his take is that ridiculous. That if you, like, it gets worse the more he tries to explain it, right? I can't figure it out. Another thing I can't figure out happened while I was gone, as we sort of reflect upon the week that was out. So KD demands a trade. This is KD showing some, he's being very assertive, being very aggressive. I want out or else. Get rid of Sean Marks. Get rid of Steve Nash. If you don't do that, I'm gone. So you know my reaction, right? My reaction isn't changing. You remember when I said KD has smoke for everyone, but who, Ira? But who? He has smoke for everyone but the guy who is
Kyrie.
Yes, but the guy who is most impactful when it comes to his basketball fortunes. Why? Like, first of all, the team was put together in your image. Everything, every move that was made was passed by you. You think Steve Nash was the coach without KD's blessing? Who thinks that?
Definitely not.
Who thinks that? Matter of fact, I thought bringing Steve Nash on was about appeasing KD. I mean, the general manager is a general manager in name. Can he make a move that KD doesn't approve? So again, I ask, why the smoke for, I mean, random dude on Twitter gets smoke from KD.
Yeah, and while you
Charles
gone,
Barkley gets smoke from KD, Stephen A. gets smoke from KD, everybody on earth.
But his teammate.
But Kyrie Irving gets smoke from KD.
Did you see Kyrie's comments that Rick Bucher reported last week while you were on vacation? So according to Rick Bucher, and he's a very good NBA insider, he's very well sourced. I have faith in Rick, who I got to know in D.C. when he was back years ago. He said that that Kyrie wanted it in his contract that he would only have to play 60 games and he would not have to play in what he called inhumane back-to-back games. I lost it on the air, Sam, last week. Because apparently playing basketball on back-to-back nights is inhumane. So we were trying to figure out what that meant. And somebody sent an example of an inhumane basketball game, but it was from Space Jam.
You cannot Martians. You cannot be surprised.
No,
right?
I'm not. He literally wanted a contract that said you only have to play three quarters of the season, and he wanted it to be acknowledged that back-to-back games on back-to-back
for the same
were inhumane.
Pay. For the same pay, right? Like, not, you know, pay me per game. I want the same money that you assigned me to pay. Again, smoke for everyone, but the guy who is most impactful to your fortunes. I do not understand.
Sam, they're either really tight or Kyrie's got some unbelievable pictures. Like,
do you want to win? Like, do you want to validate this independence, right? You want to go off on your own. You don't want to be seen as the guy who's on Steph Curry's court. I'm not saying that that was the case. He was not just a passenger in those titles. But do you want to be the guy? Like, you're the guy in every way but one. Like, you hold everyone in your orbit accountable. I mean, Michael Jordan didn't say, I take it easy on Scotty. he was hitting everyone. He got Doug Collins fired. He had smoke for Krause. He had smoke for Reisdorf. Who wants some? MJ gave it to him. Come on, KD. I'm a KD fan. That's why I'm so frustrated by it. Let's get EA on the horn. Eric Adelson, how are you this morning?
Not as riled up as you yet, Sam.
I don't get it. I don't understand.
We'll get you there, EA. We'll get you there.
I'm trying to understand why all of a sudden the problem is the front office and the coach. the front office and the coach that he approved of. That this is the brain trust that he trusted. He wants to excise them from his orbit, but not Kyrie? That just doesn't make sense to me.
I think that when you have somebody that you trust on the court for whatever reason, then that person is excluded from your fire. It's a credit to people like Michael Jordan, Kobe Bryant, that they lash out at everybody who wasn't good enough in that moment. But, you know, a lot of people don't. I mean, that's if you feel like someone's irreplaceable for whatever reason, whether it's a coworker, a spouse, a teammate, then you handle them with kid gloves. I'm not saying it's right. It's sometimes very counterproductive, but I think it happens a lot.
Hey, well, he's not going to win. you can change the coach. You can change the GM. You have Kyrie Irving on your team. You aren't winning the championship. Not unless you hold him accountable the way LeBron did. And then right. You can maybe win. But Ira just mentioned that the dude says, okay, I want a contract that says I don't have to play back-to-back games. Like, really? But he wants the same pay. Like, this is... He is the most in his own world guy I've ever seen in professional sports, really. So, EA, switching gears, much to touch upon from my time off. I'll work in reverse order and talk about the big sports story that we left off with before Rich came on, and that was the pending retirement of Serena Williams. Just her significance in professional sports, her significance and the advancement of women in sports, just the life and times and career of Serena Williams, your thoughts?
Well, did you notice, Sam, and I don't know how much time you had in your time away to coverage, did you notice there was almost none of the usual sport debate about Serena Williams' place? It's because there's no debate.
Right.
It's one of the people in the history of sports where there's no debate. You say Serena is the GOAT, no one's gonna say no. No one's going to say, well, what about? And that to me might be one of the biggest compliments you can say, is that in this world where you're always comparing somebody to somebody else, that there's no comparison for Serena Williams. And that to me says it all. And the other thing, and I mentioned to Ira when we talked about it before, is she just started. Her tennis is over competitively, but there are so many girls and boys out there who are inspired to play tennis because of her. And there's going to be a rush of Serena Williams wannabes who grow up and think that they can do it and can do it and are motivated to do it because of her. Tennis in my generation, I think was cooler because you had Chris Evert, Martina, you had John McEnroe. But in this era, I would say the last 10, 15 years, you've had a lot of, it's been a global sport, but she's really carried the American flag in a lot of ways, her and Venus. And if you subtract them, from American tennis over the last 10, 15, 20 years, man, there's a huge void there. So no matter what time, no matter what year, past, present, future, she's all alone. And again, I want to stress, she's just starting in terms of what her impact is.
Yeah. You know, we talked about, you know, she is one major off the record that Margaret Court holds. It's been 5 years since her last major victory. You get it. And she wants to have another kid. You get it. I think she still has a championship in her, a major championship, major title in her. I think just watching the stories about it, the what you have to put in to be there, to be at that level consistently at this age with all the other things that she wants to do, I think that's one of the – I don't think she believes that she can't do it. I think she believes that she can't put in that kind of time anymore and still do the other things off the court, namely expanding her family that she wants to do.
Yeah, you always think – I think that if you're that good, you always think you can do it. I think that's what's going on with Tom Brady now, is that I don't know why he's taking a break, but I think that just a few weeks realize how much he wants to come back. That might happen with Serena too. But, yeah, it's just – there's so much – you know, what's the phrase? Heavy is the head where lies the crown. Mm-hmm. I mean, she has held up the crown for so long, and because she's a woman, and because she's a black woman, and because she's a larger than life, and because she loves fashion and loves being herself and being authentic. Every time that she got something or mouthed off to a referee, she got heat that other people wouldn't. And so that's a lot. That's a lot to deal with and a lot to carry. She wants to be a mom. She wants to be a family person. She wants to do the things in her life. She has any possible opportunity. She wants to host a show or a podcast or another fashion line. She can do that too. And so I would never assume that tennis is limiting for her, but I'm sure that it was very heavy for her to carry. And I'm sure there's a lot of exciting things that she wants to do. And probably, I mean, I can never imagine what it is like to be in her body. But man, it must be a lot of wear and tear playing that in kind of intensive sport for so long. So she probably needs to rest physically too.
Yeah. Switching gears again, another topic we talked about this morning. EA, what do you vote? Do you vote on? I'm curious. What sports do you have like voting in right now?
I vote for All Pro NFL.
All Pro NFL
last 3 years. To be completely honest, it's coming up again, and I'm. I am not sure how I feel about doing one more year. So that's a perfectly honest, transparent answer. But for the last 3 years, unless it's four, at least 3 years, I've done all pro. So that's coach of the year, MVP, all the positions, all pro at all the positions. So that's what I do.
You know, so I know you don't do it. Your vote is about the is on the merits. Like you watch the games, you watch the athletes, and you base your vote on what you see on the field. There are other voters that just do it for they'll place a vote to get attention, to bring attention to themselves. Do you think there's a place for that? And it is, I ask this very pointed question for a reason. There's a guy who for Fox Sports named RJ Young, who just put out he's a voter in the AP top 25, and he left Michigan completely out of the top 25. Like, and the rationale was so asinine that it could only be to draw attention to himself. And I wonder what you think of voters who operate or who handle their votes in that way.
At first, I thought you were going to lobby for me to pick Aiden Rookie of the Year based off of his first preseason game. So I can't do that yet, Sam. He has to actually play in a game in the regular season. This is really one of the things that, and I'll put on my journalism professor hat here, too. This is one of the things that bothers me so much. You're there for the reader, for the viewer, for the customer. You're not there for yourself. And there's so much of this trying to get attention and trying to be contrarian and trying to be interesting. And it just bugs me. I looked at the maybe I'm a homer, but I thought Michigan was ranked too low in the top the preseason top 10. But leaving them off, I mean, that just doesn't make sense. Yes, of course, they're losing Ojabo. They're losing Hutchinson. They're losing Haskins. These are major, major players. So it's not going to be an easy return for Michigan. But if you look at the talent they have and if you look at the schedule they have, to leave them out, it just doesn't make sense. But this happens a lot. This happens a lot that you have the contrarian picker or the hot take. And it bothers me even more when you have the interviews. I don't know if you saw, but there was an interview with Carson Wentz. A preseason interview with Carson Wentz, the Commanders, and
totally the guy was a total clown show interview. EA total clown show interview.
And for the people who in your audience who didn't see it, it was the Eagles didn't want you. What do you have to say? Or this is your last shot. What do you have to say? And you can ask a difficult question, but you don't have to make it about you, and you don't have to make it an ambush question. And in my classes, I spend a lot of time on crafting questions. And I think too much of it is just about how people look or how people sound, or if you can do the gotcha thing. That is counterproductive at best, and it gives us a bad name at worst. So seeking attention it happens so much in media, but I really try to teach my students that the best attention you can get is if you get a good answer.
Mm-hmm. Well said, Professor Adelson. Well said. Dude shouldn't have a vote. He should not have a vote. Another big story that happened while I was out last week. It made me do a happy dance. They could see it even though I wasn't around them. That when Al Avila got fired, I don't celebrate, the professional ruin of anyone. But he had his opportunity. I think he had really run its course. And if you don't, in your entire tenure, make one effective trade, one trade that works out, EA, I think that should disqualify you from being in that position any longer. And ultimately, it seems like Chris Illich came to that same conclusion.
Yeah, it's the easiest decision. I mean, like you, I hate it when somebody loses a job because that's somebody's family and somebody's future, and anybody who loses. I mean, I've lost a job, so I know how it is. It's just been, I've watched most of the games this season, and there's no identity. There's no, even last year, there was like a AJ Hinch baseball. Like they would try to get an extra base and they would try to move. They would try to have speed and they would try to, have a lineup that fits the ballpark. And now they have none of that. I love Javi Baez, but he doesn't really fit in. Tucker Barnhart, I don't know what he's batting, 200, something like that. I don't have any problem with these particular players, but it just doesn't feel like a team. It feels like a collection of people. The bullpen is good. And I know that there have been injuries in terms of the starters, but when you have number one pick after number one pick or high pick after high pick, and then none of them pan out for various reasons. I know you can't blame for Casey Mize getting hurt, but Torkelson is obviously struggling. He hasn't been the answer. There's been a different lineup every day, and beyond that, it just doesn't feel like a team, and they're not competitive. I think it was something like already almost 50 games they've played. They haven't scored more than two runs. You can't do that. I mean, you just can't do that. They're non-competitive, and you got to do something different. And I hope it corrects itself when some of the pitchers get healthy. Torkelson finds himself. Riley Green has been a bright light. And like I said, the pitching staff is, I think, pretty good overall. There's no momentum. There's no progress. And especially when you compare to the Lions, the Red Wings, the Pistons, those teams, it's obvious that there's some positive direction, and you don't see it at all with the Tigers.
Yeah, I posed a question to you a month or two ago about Chris Illich and what recourse do fans have if butts in the seats don't matter, if you get, TV revenue is so huge that you don't really – have to care what the fans say or think. But I now have some hope that, because when he said that, hey, I'm pleased with Al Avila, that it was clearly not totally accurate, and that he is at least echoing the sentiments, the feelings of the fans who think that, hey, this was a team that was expected to be at least 500, maybe be a wild card contender, and here they are 30 games under 500. That's unacceptable.
Yeah, no. I mean, I think that in Detroit, you're never going to have the laissez-faire reaction. That's one thing that's really great about Detroit sports is you're not going to have fans who – you might have fans that check out for a season, but every spring you're going to expect the Tigers to be pretty good or hope the Tigers are pretty good, and you're not going to accept losing. You'll accept a five-year plan. I think that there's patience with Heisman. I think that there's patience – certainly there's been patience with Lions that keep coming back, but people in Detroit are not going to just throw up their hands. They care too much. And I think that at least Chris Illich sort of understands not only that, but I mean, look at his family. His dad built one of the best dynasties in Detroit sports history. Okay. So you're comparing yourself with that.
Right.
And he grew up, I'm not sure exactly how old he is, but I think he's around our age. And so he grew up and he saw what it took. And you don't want to go out with being the Illich that just couldn't get it done. And no matter how much you're friends with Al Avila or AJ Hinch, I just don't think that you're gonna take that. They were clearly non-competitive. And the Red Wings, when Illich took over in the first few years, they were also very non-competitive. But their draft picks clicked. They built a team culture. Even if you showed up to Joe Louis Arena and all you got was two good fights, at least there was energy. And you don't have any of that now. And I think it's obvious to him and everyone else.
Yeah. And again, you know, comparing him to his dad, that's why I was feeling kind of hopeless. Like, man, is he just content understanding that no matter how much they lose, he's still going to make money with the Tigers? That's how insane the TV deals are now. But it's I'm heartened by it that, you know, it being shown that that's not the case. That, okay, you know, there is an expectation here. There is a standard. It's not being met. The fans are upset, and I am too. That gives me hope, some hope for the future. One more before we get to the break, EA. Have you ever seen, and we're coming off of a period where you had a very public spat between Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban. These are two coaches from two different programs, right? Have you ever seen a public spat between two coaches at the same school the way that John Calipari and Mark Stoops are going back and forth right now?
Man, I cannot remember anything like that. It's pretty amazing. I'm sort of racking my brain to go. I mean, there's sometimes silos that you have the coaches that just kind of don't talk to each other. The one that comes to mind is Gino Auriemma and Khan, where they kind of operated in the same gym, but they operated in their own sphere, and you never saw them together, and they didn't really talk about
that's
each other.
True.
You know, so I don't want to say that there was a spat, but that was kind of interesting that at the time, they were two of the best coaches in the sport, and it was like that they were on different campuses, even though they were in the same gym every day.
Uh-huh.
So that's a similar comparison, but none of them would, like, you know, Gino would sort of always kind of grouse privately about something that bothered him or a grievance. And Jim Calhoun was obviously not a wallflower, but they weren't going in press conferences and going and putting people on blast. They were just kind of grumbling. And this is, I think, a different level.
Yeah. I actually kind of see Calipari's point here. It's like, hey, man, what has Kentucky football ever done? Like, are we really seriously debating whether Kentucky is a basketball school? I mean, it does seem a little outlandish that Stoops is making a big deal, at least to me.
Yeah. I mean, I think that if you're Stoops and if you're in that conference where basically, is there another school in that conference where basketball is even close? I mean, even when Florida basketball is good, it's just like, okay, well, that's what we do when football's not around.
Right.
So, it's really hard to, I can imagine, not to really sympathize fully, but I can imagine I'm building something. Kentucky's actually pretty good and won a bowl game, sent, I really like that Wandell Robinson. I think he's going to be a pretty good pro. So there's progress, there's momentum, there's reason to talk about Kentucky football, but it's just going to be, I think it's a little bit harder for him to recruit there. Because every other SEC school, and not only that, but Ohio State, Cincinnati, I mean, Louisville, those are all right there. Even outside the SEC, Cincinnati's right there. Ohio State's right there. You're in Big Ten country, basically. And then if you've ever been to that area, there's sort of a bleed between the border in terms of you're sort of in Ohio and you're sort of in Kentucky. So it's a hard place to recruit, and I think this makes it harder. So I think you want to make some noise and sort of pound your chest a little bit, but every other, you know, that every other school you're recruiting against would be like, Kentucky, that's a basketball school. you're gonna be second class citizen on that campus. People are not gonna know your name. Whereas if you come here, then you know you have red carpet for 4 years. That's something that you have to fight against, and I can understand why I'd be frustrated.
Gotcha. All right, we'll take a break. When we come back on the other side, NFL time. I had to leave a whole block with EA to get your take on the Lions preseason game number one. It is a preseason game, but want your takeaways, and then we can go around the NFL horn as well and get some other observations on them also. We've got to get to a break. Back on the other side with more Eric Adelson. Stay tuned here on the Michigan Insider on Sports Talk 1050 WTK, The Ticket.
The countdown is on for the 2024 NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, live from Detroit, and you can attend in person for free.
Welcome to the NFL Draft.
See the next NFL stars and experience the ultimate NFL fan festival, featuring live concerts, interactive games, player autographs, and more. The NFL Draft, presented by Bud Light, April 25th through 27th. Visit NFL.com/draft access to register for free entry today.